You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Thank you very much, Scott, and thanks to you for stopping by. Our first broadcast in 2023. Whoa! We'll be taking a good gardening stroll shortly, but right now, if you have any questions or concerns about your plant material, outdoors or indoors, you can give a call at 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. As every Saturday morning since 1996, wow, a long time ago. But anyway, we get together and have a roundtable discussion about what's impacting you and your landscape. Your specialty garden space, how are your houseplants doing? And should you be putting things in larger pots this time of year? How much fertilizer should you be doing inside or out? Should you be cutting things? Should you be pruning things? Should you be looking for bugs and diseases? And yes, you should. Use the information to hopefully to help solidify the decisions you decide to make. And the orchestration will be obviously on your shoulders because it's your landscape. And that final judgment hopefully will be to the plus side. This is your show, by the way, and I appreciate you inviting me into your home, car, or wherever you happen to be listening. Very, very important player is Drew. He's here today, and he's producing. So when you do call in, he will just need your first name, and that's pretty much it. I'll put it up on the call screener, and then I will talk to you. I'm Mike Miller. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline since 1994. Is that right, 94? Yeah. Oh, gosh. I thought it was 96. Anyway. Doesn't really matter. I can come to your home and do a walk and talk if you like. And that's where I kind of evaluate circumstances and questions that you may have and also keep my eyes open for things that maybe you hadn't considered being impactful onto your landscape. You can go to my website, www.mikemillerdesigns.com. On the homepage, there's my email address. My email address is mmillerdesigns22@gmail.com, and my phone number as well, where I can be reached. Well, let's get moving. Today's stroll is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Well, under a full moon in the western sky, I mean, that was a really nice moon this morning. And I was kind of wandering around. I never really know where I'm going to go for my good gardening stroll. But I ended up on Lynch Street in McNair, and there is a relatively, what I think is a relatively new park there. Maybe it is not new, but, you know, the sign looks pretty darn new. It's Remont Park, and as you stepped off the sidewalk, you're greeted on, that would be on the west side, by a budded magnolia that says, "Welcome." The pathway winds past around and everything else is playground. There's a large series of shade trees in this area, and as you look through from like on the west side of the park, through the large shade trees with the sky lightening up a little bit, it really kind of was nice looking. And even though it was a little bit cold, the breeze was a little bit, Anyway, as I wandered around the pathways, I saw there was a clump of knockout roses. They were there. Just going, oh, when is warm weather going to come? And there's a large open area, too, on the south side. And there's also basically a dog park. Yes, Benton Park Dog Park. And there's holiday decorations, which were glistening from a crabapple tree. Birds were just waking up. I didn't see any squirrels. Really kind of caught me by surprise. And there was a lot of different shrubs that are waiting for warmer weather. But they still got to say, well, you know, it's still pretty early. We don't want to open up any kind of buds or anything this early. Some of the first things you may see in the early spring are, I'm not going to tell you. You're going to have to tell me what they are. Anyway, there's lots of different stuff going on. I haven't seen any, even in my yard, spring flowering bulbs at all. No foliage. You wouldn't see the flower buds at all. But you might see the foliage coming up depending upon the exposure. So that's something you could certainly consider. So there's all kinds of stuff going to be happening real soon. A lot of many of the garden centers are just now starting to stock, you know, some of the not too much plant material that was, let's say, relatively new. But I still have some three pots of pansies that I bought last fall, and they're still blooming. I do, you know, I did cheat a little bit. I had them outside, and then I brought them inside and put them in the garage, and I have them in the garage window. But it's kind of nice to see some flowers this time of year. So, again, if you do have any questions or concerns about your landscape, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Mike Miller, I'll be right back after these messages. Yes, folks, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. You got questions or concerns. And right now, take a look out. If you have a cool season lawn, it's probably looking pretty good. Hopefully you took care of it in through the fall. And with aeration and mowing and fertilizing and things like that. But the cool season ones needed that. The warm season ones, you better not have fertilized it because it could have forced it into, even though we didn't have super cold, we had some cold weather a couple weeks ago, and that could really cause some real problems with it. So just please understand that. And what you should do, too, I have zoysia lawn. My zoysia lawn in the front, I probably should have cut it one more time in the fall and I didn't do that. So it's getting a little bit kind of icky looking. So I might take my mower out today and go ahead and do the mowing of that. And also watch out for the leaf debris on any kind of lawn, because it could really cause some problems with various types of fungus, like Fusarium patch, which is like a pink snow mold. And there's multiple other ones as well. So just watch out for letting stuff pile up. Because we live across the street from Christie Park, and the prevailing winds blow the leaves from the park into our yard. So I'm constantly raking them and trying to keep it down to a minimum. Let's head right now over to Rebecca's yard. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi, and your show is the highlight of the week. It's so true. I have a question about boxwood, though. I have a hedge of boxwood, and I don't know if it was the really cold weather, but the leaves are falling off, like, not all of them, but many of them. If I just touch the boxwood, the leaves just fall off onto the ground. But there's a lot of new budding growth at the tip, so I'm hoping it's not dead, but is it because of the cold weather?
Well,
I've never seen it lose the leaves like that.
Yeah, it's, you know, every year is going to be a little bit different because of our screwy weather. But as long as the tips are still green, the interior foliage, I don't know how old your hedge is, but the interior foliage will finally drop off entirely. There won't be enough sun, you know, striking on the inside. So you're going to have a situation where probably maybe the last 6 or 8 inches of each twig will have foliage on it, but the interior part of the boxwood will be pretty much naked. So why they didn't drop previously, historically they just kind of do it on a routine basis, and why there's such a dramatic amount this year is just weather-related exposure and all that type thing.
All right. Well, thank you. It's about 10 years old.
Okay.
And the leaves that are falling off now are on the exterior of it. They're just, I just walk past the hedge, you can tell the color of the leaves is just like a silvery green, not the normal color that they are. So it just looked like they were burnt or something, but they're not.
Right.
So I, I didn't know. So I just thought it's the weather, but I thought I'd better ask. So.
Right. And so don't do anything right now. And if the tips of the branch, twigs and branches and stuff, if they've lost their leaves, that's not a good sign. So
even though they have the new bud right at the tip of the branch, all the branches have new tips, like they're ready to bloom.
Right.
The leaves are just, something happened.
Oh.
Okay. And, well, thank you.
Yeah, there's been some wind chills that have been a little bit ferocious for sure.
Right. Well, thank you so much.
Sure, my pleasure. Yeah, the broadleaf evergreens also realize that they need to have an acidic soil. And so, you know, using iron sulfate will help acidify your soil. And if you do any fertilizing, you're not going to fertilize until the new growth begins in the springtime. And make sure that it's a fertilizer specifically for acid-loving plants, because that will have some of the minor micronutrients as well as the essential macronutrients. And just keep that in mind, because that's really important. As I said before, the garden centers are not quite up and going yet, but they're going to be up and going really soon. And probably another maybe month or so, then you're going to start to see some of the cool season annuals showing up and cool season vegetables as well. So that, like I was talking about, my pansies are still really, you know, I was just really surprised that they survived as well as they did. With your houseplants, you definitely want to, you know, watch out for them. You want to make sure that they don't get too dry, but you don't want to overwater them, because overwatering can keep the root system not doing so well. It could cause some rotting circumstances with it. And fertilizing this time of year with your houseplants, you can fertilize, but just do so at 1/2 the label rate and kind of wait. You could do it a little bit right now. It wouldn't hurt, but don't over-fertilize, because generally with the fertilizing means you're using water and to sort of mix the fertilizer up, and then you pour it onto the potting mix. But that means you're adding some more water to the situation, so just watch out about that. And humidity is really important for the houseplants for the most part. Not all of them, of course, but the majority of them. So having a saucer underneath your pot with a little bit of moisture in it, meaning water, will help keep the humidity a little bit higher. And just watch out for various types of insects on your houseplants. Things like, even which are not really impacting adversely, not that bad at least, like fungus gnats. You'll see them kind of flying around just around one plant. And where they're living is the eggs and everything are laid into the potting mix. So, and to get rid of that, you can get some horticultural vinegar and follow the label rate and just pour it around on the soil. Or you can use other types of insecticides too, which will kill these the adults. And you can get a variety. Talk to your favorite garden center about which one might help control the eggs that haven't hatched yet. There's not too many that will, but there are some. And the products you use, just keep in mind to follow the label. If you don't, then you're going to have some real trouble just in general. My garage is full of large pots, which I grow lots of different kinds of summer-type bulbs. And I've got to get some of them cleaned up, and that's one of the things. Maybe after I do the lawn mowing today, I'm going to start clearing out some of my pots and separating and pulling my bulbs out of the potting mix. Historically, I always did that in the fall and then took the bulbs inside and put them in the basement in paper bags. But I wanted to try something a little bit different this year and see if just leaving them in the pot and then pulling them out later on, like now, and then kind of cleaning them up, take a look at them, see if there's any kind of damage, any the rotting spots or anything like that, and then discard the ones that are not in good shape and then keep the ones that are in good shape. And that's one of the other things that I have that need to be done. Need to start watching, too, your spring flowering plant materials, like your dogwoods. It's a little bit early for the dogwoods, but witch hazel, that's going to be one of the first things that starts blooming. And it's just nice to see. And when something starts blooming, that's a time when you can go out and you can do something called deep root feeding. Deep root feeding is where you take an electric drill out with a large drill bit on it, and you auger some holes in the ground around the around the shrub or the tree or whatever it happens to be, and you backfill those with compost. And what you're doing with the compost is you're feeding the soil. You're not directly feeding the individual shrub or tree or whatever it happens to be. And that's kind of a better way to do it. I've not really ever been into fertilizing trees per se, and I have fertilized some plant materials shrub-wise because it really helps them, like the lady with the boxwood, the azaleas, and even some of the deciduous shrubs do a little bit better when they are fertilized. With the larger trees, I don't do that at all. And one thing about we love the spring flowering, which is great, but it is really kind of tough on the plant material because it's any kind of flowering is just exhausting for the plant. And that's, you know, one of the things that you got to be, you know, realize that during those periods of time, you should be concerned about your plant material. And just realize that, just like us, when you're doing something that's really stressful, whether you're running or walking or bicycling or anything else, it can be exhausting. And that's kind of a similar thing to the plant material. And as I was talking about the lawns, the most expensive really landscape is in your landscape is really going to be if you have a lawn circumstance. So just keep an eye out for those things that are really, you know, detrimental to it. Weed-wise, the weed that I'm getting most in my yard right now is chickweed. And that's, again, one of the cool season annual weeds. And it actually started to germinate last August. And they've been growing along with henbit and annual bluegrass and prickly lettuce and Persian speedwell, lots of them. But the one that I have, I used to have quite a bit of the Persian speedwell, which is a very low-growing annual weed that has kind of flowers that are about half the size of a pencil eraser, and they're blue. And I pretty much have gotten rid of that. I really go after stuff with not a whole lot of herbicides and not a whole lot of pre-emergence. And the reason why I don't do those, even though I recommend them, is I want to see what's, you know, coming up so I can kind of keep a mind or an eye on letting you know what I'm seeing in my yard. And then when I take my, you know, walks every day, that I watch or I look in people's yards or even in the space in between the sidewalk and the streets and see what kind of weed circumstance there actually is. And to control those, you know, cool season weeds, you know, annual type, that was when you would have put a pre-emergent down last, guess what, August. So a while ago, that's when the seeds start germinating. Now coming up is the warm season annual weeds, and we're going to be putting a pre-emergent down. If you'd like to use a pre-emergent to control the seeds as they germinate, just watch out for the yellow forsythia. When it's blooming, that's when you'd be putting the pre-emergent down. That's when the ground temperatures are, let's say 55 to 60 degrees several days in a row. That's what triggers the flowering on the forsythia, and that also is what triggers the germination of the warm season annual weeds. And that includes spurge, ragweed, purslane, knotweed, lamb's quarter, lots of different kinds like crabgrass, barnyard grass. Now, I do have quite a, you know, some clumps of, you know, crabgrass. Goosegrass, that's one of the other things that really is, I've really never had the goosegrass, but I'm always curious to actually, I do see it in people's yards. So that was another one of those annual weeds that you can control passively by putting a pre-emergent down. And again, pre-emergent goes down when the yellow forsythia is in bloom. So it's going to be still a couple weeks before that happens. And what you can do, too, rather than waiting for something to bloom, you can go to your favorite garden center and get a soil thermometer. And when you start to see the soil thermometers, the soil temperature, you know, 55 to 60 degrees several days in a row, that's when the pre-emergent can go down, because that's a, sort of the temperature that triggers the warm season annual weeds germinating. So Mike Miller, KMOS Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
This is a time of year when you're going to start maybe thinking about measuring your bed space so you can put some new mulch down. You don't have to put the mulch, but the mulch, there is a true benefit to the mulch. It's decorative and it's a protective layer. And basically what it does is help your soil conserve moisture. So that's really kind of important. It does inhibit some weed growth as well. And it can be, you know, some of the damage to plant material, which is caused by even wind chills. You know, sometimes when they say, well, the temperature is only 30 degrees right now, but when you get, you know, you have the wind chill factor included in that, then you find out that it's really like in the low 20s. And that can be damaging, you know, to the root systems of the plant material as well as the above ground growth. So always just keep that in mind. And certainly the mulch does help that. Just watch out. Don't put too much mulch down around herbaceous type things, perennials, whether they're perennials, ground covers, that thing. Herbaceous type, meaning they die, go below ground during the wintertime, or evergreen types like hellebores. They all can really use mulch, but only keep it like at a 2 to 3 inches at the most. And if you've got the existing mulch there, don't add another 2 or 3 inches on top of that. So just make sure that it doesn't get that much deeper, because it can be detrimental to the plant material. Even though it is offering some protection, it can be overly protective and cause trouble. Around trees, it can go up to like 4 to 6 inches of the mulch depth-wise. And just you know, don't do more than that. It's not going to be to the advantage of the plant material. And one of the things of, you know, improving your soil, because a lot of us have clay soils, and that's what all these bricks and the brick buildings are all about. By adding compost, it improves the soil structure. It makes density is right, you know, helps with the density, and just a better system or better circumstance for the plant roots to kind of move out and absorb the nutrients and moisture that are really very much essential. And so just be sure that if you're going to do that, with the compost, that you get true good compost that has been certified and been tested, so you don't have any kind of problems with it. Because I've gotten some different type stuff, because I do fool around with buying things just to check out the product and things like that, where I've had some shotgun, you know, fungus that has really, I've spread, this was not the compost, but this was with the mulch. And it's threw black specks up on the side of our house. And so there's all kinds of different things that are, you just don't actually expect to happen, but it certainly can happen. What you need to do, too, is just realize that, you know, topsoil quality is really very important. So the specifications require topsoil to have organic matter in it, have some clay, yes, and have a pH as measured, so you know what you're putting down into the ground. Because if you're growing plants like, let's say, lilacs, or you're growing plants like clematis, you want to have a slightly alkaline soil. So in other words, you want to have the pH above 7. 7 is neutral. Below 7 is acidic. And getting a soil test done, as I continue to talk about over and over and over again, like with your lawn, when lawn services would say, well, you should put lime down. And without, if they haven't had a soil test, or you haven't had a soil test that you show them that, you know, what the results of the soil test was, if it's a situation where the soil is already let's say, a little bit alkaline, that's not good because lawn really needs a soil that's slightly acidic. So like about 6.5 is ideal soil pH for lawns, whether it's a cool season lawn or a warm season lawn, either one. And that's real, really, really important just for the overall health of the, you know, the lawn just kind of in general. And so just keep that in mind. And when you're, if you're planning on doing some plant installation, you can certainly get out there and cite the plant material where you want to plant it. And just make sure that you're thinking about not the existing size of the plant that you may be buying, but the mature size. So often plants are, you know, installed too close to houses, too close to walkways, too close to this, too close to that, as far as how much the plant's actually going to grow and how big it's going to get. It's going to get too, you know, too large for that situation. Then it just kind of adds to the work level. And it's going to be a couple, maybe a couple years before it's going to be trouble. But still, why not just think ahead of time? And that's going to be to the, you know, to your advantage and the plant material's advantage. That way you don't have to do a lot of pruning and things along that line. Again, back to the pre-emergence just a little bit, because forsythia is going to be coming up in bloom soon. So what you can do is the pre-emergence, you can put it down and just find out what the square footage is of your lawn area if you're going to use it on a, you know, as a pre-emergent in your lawn. And that way you'll know how much of the pre-emergent that you're going to want to buy. You don't want to buy too much, just like with the fertilizing and everything else. Chemical-wise, we're sort of messing with Mother Nature, but we're also trying to grow things that Mother Nature wouldn't necessarily have in this, you know, in this region. So getting the right amount at the right time is very, very important. If you don't do that, then it's going to be trouble for the plants that you're trying to help. You could actually be doing, you know, more trouble for them. Plant material wise, I've got several containers of with evergreens growing in them, conifers, some junipers, and some Alberta spruce. And through the wintertime, there was like twice that I thought, well, it's been kind of dry, so I just went out and took a bucket of water out and did some watering with them. And as soon as the weather warms up a little bit more, I'm going to do some fertilizing on those evergreens with an acid-based fertilizer. And it's just, you know, that is really, really important. So fertilizing your spring-blooming woodies, whether they're trees or shrubs, you should wait until the flowering is finished and then fertilize it at that time. If you want to do the fertilizing, you've already heard me talk about how I like to do just kind of a deep root feeding and feed the soil as opposed to fertilizing. But, you know, many people do fertilizing, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that, you know, I take certainly a different approach and start watching out, too, as the weather, you know, warms up. I actually, which kind of surprised me, slugs and snails, as they creep across, let's say, sidewalks or areas, you can see kind of their slimy trails, and they're really shiny, but they were originally slimy, but to see that, you know, this time of year really kind of caught me by surprise. And so I start watching out and looking on the underside of the plant material, foliage and things like that, for the slugs and snails. And it's a good time if you've got all kinds of shoots, let's say, coming off your trees, whether they're crab apples, magnolias, or anything else. And the shoots, you know, like the young growth, you can go ahead and do that pruning right now. There's nothing wrong with that. So you can kind of shape up your plant material. And that's with woodies as well as trees. And but the thing is, if you're going to do any kind of pruning at all, whether it's removing these little twigs, this sort of radical growth, don't leave like a 2-inch stem. Or if you're cutting off branches of anything, don't leave stubs. Cut them back where you're going to make the cut about a quarter to a half inch from the whatever you're cutting it from. So whether that's a trunk or the next larger branch it's attached to. And there's a watch out for, you know, I don't, street trees, you know, are experiencing lots of, you know, potential damage. If they're relatively small, some street trees, you know, don't just, they grow at a regular, you know, rate, and they're relatively small, but larger trucks going up and down the street or street sweepers or things like that can do some damage to the branches, and to have, you know, have some cracks to the branches, even if it doesn't break them off entirely, can lead to problems as the weather starts warming up as far as rainwater, or, you know, they were talking, I think Scott was saying, you know, we've got a potential with rain coming up or snow coming up, even if it's going to be wet, and there's cracks in the trunks or in the some of the branches, the moisture from that can get in there and cause some heartwood rot. So just keep that in mind. Mike Miller, we do have phone lines open, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, phone lines open, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. This is a perfect time of year to be feeding the birds. Hopefully you're doing that, as you know that I feed the birds by spreading the bird seed out on the sidewalk. And I'll tell you, yesterday, man, oh, man, there was probably, I would say, 50 sparrows. There was about four or five or six cardinals, male and female both. There were some starlings and then some doves as well. So it was really kind of fun to stand inside and look out the window and watch the birds. I find that it's really kind of a, just it's kind of neat to do. So I'm almost out of bird seed, so I'm going to have to get some bird seed on my way home today. And then the birds just kind of wait until I obviously throw that out. And so let's head over to Linda's yard now. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I have a question about a Christmas cactus. I used to have a lot more success growing them, but I don't anymore. I have a very small one, and it's just like on, it's one-sided. It's on one side of the pot. So I saw some that were on sale yesterday, I guess clearing them out, and they really look very healthy, and they're not very big. So the little one I have, he has a couple of buds on it. It did bloom, like just one bud. It's really pretty puny. So should I wait? If I buy one of those, I wanted to combine them in one pot. So should I wait until after these buds are done to do that, to, you know, to transplant my little one out of the pot it's in into a bigger pot with the other one?
Yeah, definitely.
It'll look better.
Yeah, this from an aesthetic standpoint, and also just, you know, just with the days still being pretty short, even though you've got them inside and probably in a sunny window and everything else, you just don't want to disrupt the root system because it's, you know, recovery time may not be, you know, to the advantage of the plant material, let's put it that way. So
okay.
And make sure that you don't get a very large pot. You might pull the new one that you're buying, if it's in, let's say, a 4-inch pot or so, just pull that out and then try to work the small one that you have into the potting mix with the new one that you're purchasing, as opposed to buying a bigger pot with and then, you know, using, you know, potting mix for cactus. I would say use what's there is in with the existing one that you're, the new plant that you're going to buy.
Yeah, I think they're both in that kind of a mix. I think, yeah, they're both in a 4-inch pot.
Okay.
I believe it is a fairly small one. So, yeah, I just want to try to, I don't want to take like any of the dirt off mine or off that other one, just kind of spit them both. That I don't know if I could really do that.
Well, you can take some of the soil off of it. Just pull the small one that you have, just pull it off and just kind of, I don't want to say violently shake it, but, you know, just kind of use your fingers and work some of the potting,
gently.
You know, potting mix away, and then do that with the new one that you're buying. And that should be, you know, give you adequate space to put the existing one in with that.
Both into the 4-inch pot.
Right.
Okay. And do they like Do they like plastic pots the best, do you think?
Well, I don't think it really matters that much with them. So,
okay.
Because with a plastic pot, I mean, as opposed to a terracotta pot, a lot of times the nurseries anymore are just doing the plastic pots because they're lighter and they're sort of easier to transport. But that really doesn't make that much difference with, because these are, they're cactus technically, and that's just because of the flower structure, the number of stamens and all this other stuff. But it doesn't really have anything to do with where they're from, because they're really from a tropical part of the world.
Right.
Okay. So,
and I had called you about, you know, the lantanas I was bringing in and putting down under the grow light. And I have success with 50% of them. One is actually putting buds on, which I can't believe that. And the other four look like, I don't know, I'm going to stick with them for a while because, you know, one of them didn't look too good. And there's growth coming out from the roots. You know, it's putting on green leaves. But
right.
The one is getting ready to bloom. I think that's kind of miraculous.
Yeah, anyway, I completely agree.
It's just kind of fun.
Even a full, you know, full spectrum of grow lights and things like that, it's still, you know, kind of an odd world for them to be blooming on the, you know, inside. And the other mm-hmm. ones that don't look well, if you're going to ultimately move those back outside, any of the growth that doesn't look good, cut that off and see if the plant can recover.
Okay. When all chance of frost is over.
Right. Exactly. So.
Yep.
You're probably, you know, who knows when, you know, date-wise, it's hard to do that. But, you know,
sure.
I mean, even if it does frost, if you have them up close, you know, close to your house, then that will offer some protection from, you know, let's say you think, well, this should be a safe date to put it out. And you do put it out, and then we get one of those freaky, let's say, late spring type, you know, cold spells. The plant material can probably survive in that situation.
Yeah, I think last year in April, we had one of the latest frost dates ever that I can remember.
Right.
It was past the 15th. So, yeah, it's just all kind of a fun experiment, I think.
I agree. I mean, having success with anything is, it's not easy to grow something even outside, as well as, you know, some of the tropical stuff that you're speaking of with the lantana or the Christmas cactus or anything else. It is, it's a tough world.
And I have my best success with the Christmas cactus of putting it, well, I have a screen porch, so I put that out there until depending on the weather, Halloween, and then bring it in, give it a really mild fertilizer.
Right.
Really. And then, you know, I've had really success with that in the past of them budding out, but we'll see. I really want to add to this one because it's just, like I say, really small. I don't know what happened to it. I tried to start, you know, one of the root things on the other side, putting it down in the soil. It didn't work. I've had success with that in the past, too. But anyway, thank you for your help.
Oh, sure. And my pleasure.
Have a great rest of your weekend.
Yeah, you did the same thing. Yeah, I agree with
that one lady. It's kind of a highlight. It's definitely the highlight of a Saturday. Maybe the whole week.
Well, thank you. I greatly appreciate it. Yeah,
right.
So having success outside or inside with our screwy weather, and even if it's in a controlled environment like within the house, you know, success 1 year doesn't necessarily guarantee that there's going to be success, you know, in the following year. Another thing is you're looking outside take my walks as I talk about. A couple people have you know, large dogs or small dogs, and they don't have any kind of, you know, lawn that can handle the dogs running along the fence. And so that's the soil compaction, and there's really nothing you can possibly do. What you might do is just kind of give up on trying to grow grass in those situations. And because even if you, let's say, divide off where you're not having any kind of, let's say, lawn growth due to the dog compaction, and keep the dogs out of there for a while, have sod brought in or seed and germinated, then when you finally take the barriers back down, the dogs are going to be running along the fence again, and then consequently you're going to be right back to where you are now. So that's just one of those, you know, those type things. One of our neighbors has an Akita, a Japanese dog, pretty good size and everything else. And I know that when I walk past the house on the sidewalk, I see that dog running along the fence and barking at, you know, anybody that goes by. But lots of different stuff going on in the outdoors, and it's very fun to play with all this different stuff, whether it's your dogs, your pets, birds, or anything else. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after the news.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Thank you, Scott. And, wow, when I look out the window right now, the clouds aren't here yet. It's nice to see some nice sun. And this is the second hour of the Garden Hotline, the Tip of the Trowel Hour. And I'll be giving the Tip of the Trowel shortly. But right now, if you have questions, concerns, or comments about your landscape, house plants, plant material, design-wise, trying to give some thoughts to something, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. By the way, thanks for having me on your show. And we can discuss the caring for, the ups and downs and all around of annuals, bulbs, edibles, ground covers, houseplants, lawns, perennials, roses, shrubs, vines, trees, and water gardens. I'll share my thoughts, but please remember my answers, comments, and opinions is not the only garden path to take, but strictly offered for you to consider. Across the big board, that's Drew. He answers the phone. He'll need just your first name. He'll put you up on the call screener, computers, and we'll go from there. During the week, I do landscape consulting. I don't do any kind of formal designs anymore, but that's because I'm just too old. But anyway, you can go to my website, www.mikemillerdesigns.com. On the homepage, you're going to see my email address, which is mmillerdesigns22@gmail.com, and my phone number as well, where you can contact me and I'll come to your home and do a walk and talk. And during the walk and talk, I share 40 plus years of experience as it relates to your home's landscape design, your plants, and care and maintenance as well. Tip of the Trowel is a special recognition for individual, group, or situation that's made an impression on me and is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Tip of the Trowel goes out to the St. Louis Water Company. St. Louis Water Company, we had a water main break on the street right across from us, or in the street. It was right across from us. Now, Tracy, they do make a lot of noise because they got to get down into where the hole, you know, dig a hole, get down to where the water line is and everything else. But they did a really good job, and they were, you know, I mean, they did as much as they could possibly do as far as being, let's say, logical about how they're doing it. It's almost finished now. They've got it all tamped down. And last thing that needs to be done is the new concrete poured onto it. But, I mean, it was quite a bit of water coming up out of the ground for a couple days. And I don't know if, I guess I should have called. I waited for somebody else to do the call. And I thought it was just kind of bubbling up from like four different things. And this was a spot that had been repaired in a recent, you know, I don't know exactly how long ago, but it was our streets in that particular area are asphalt. But you can tell where they've done some major repair because the repair patchwork is always in concrete. And so this spot had been, you know, problematic in the past. So hopefully the water company has it all together. So 314-436-7900, 1-800-925-1120. Again, St. Louis Water Company and the refuse as well, but it was the water people that came out and took care of this water main break. So greatly appreciated it. Let's go ahead and take a call or two, and where should we go first? We're going to Ville. Hi, Ville. How are you?
Okay. I have a famous peony question, or piney, or whatever you want to call it.
Uh-huh.
I thought I had redug all mine, but I left one that I got marked with a rock and a bucket over it. Can I replant it this spring, or should I let it go through the cycle?
Well, you can.
Next fall.
Yeah, if you're going to do it, get out there before you start to see the, you know, the foliage, you know, breaking the surface of the ground. You can do it, okay. Water it the night before, and then dig it up and have the new location ready to go. And just realize that you're probably better off to dig it up out of the ground, leave it sit on top of the ground for a day or two, because when you first dig it up, you probably know, since you said you've already dug up some other ones, yeah. The root system's really brittle, and you don't want to break it, you know, do any kind of real breakage of the root system. Why it's real brittle when you first pull it out, I don't know, but after it sits above the ground for a day or so, then it's, you know, gets a little more supple, and it's much easier to put in a new location. And then make
so
sure.
I should do it March or April then?
You can. I would do it prior to that.
Okay.
So that way, by then, you're already starting to see the foliage break. And when that starts happening, to relocate them can kind of set them back. It won't necessarily kill them, but it can just kind of make them, like, not feel so good.
How come they're so expensive in the seed catalogs? Good Lord.
Well, it's pretty extensive. You know, I mean, even from divisions, it takes a while to get something large enough that's going to be, let's say, sellable. So in other words, you don't see any peonies in like a 4 or 6 inch pot. You usually see them in a 2 or 3 gallon pot. And that's because of the, you know, extensive root system and everything else. And it takes several years to get them to be that large to be able to be acceptable. And the reason why there's not smaller ones is because people just don't have that patience to wait to finally see the flowers.
I guess I got more patience than they give me credit for. Thank you very much, and you have a happy new year, and keep your good advice coming our way.
Great. Greatly appreciate it. And let's go ahead and take a break. Mike Miller, KMWash Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Let's head over to Dorn's. Hi, Dorn. Hello, Dorn, are you there?
Doris?
Oh, sorry, Doris.
Okay. I just wanted to let you know that the spring flowers are up. My tulips are up about 2 inches.
Wow.
Which means I have to get wire around them before the deer do. But the daffodils are just starting to come up, and the crocuses, and even the surprise lilies.
Oh, my goodness gracious. So that's, are these on the south-facing, you know, part of your yard or something?
It's on all different sizes. The tulips are on the east side, and they're under a bunch of leaves. And the surprise lilies are on the west side, I guess. And the daffodils are on the east.
Gee whiz. That's a little bit surprising for this early because, I mean, it has been off and on warm. But I was just going to talk about if you start to see the emerging foliage on these spring flowering bulbs, you can go ahead and do some light fertilizing with that to kind of give them some little bit of boost for hopefully having another year of flowering with them. Some of the, you know, spring flowers, I don't know if you've had our spring flowering bulbs, if you've had these bulbs for several years or if they're brand new.
Oh, no, they're old.
Oh, so, yeah. So, because the older varieties seem to be tougher hybrids than some of the newer ones. Recently purchased ones. With the daffodils, will still give you a couple years, but with the tulips, 1 or 2 years is going to be the most. So it sounds like
I've had these probably 7 or 8 years, I guess.
Wow, sounds great. So you've done a good job with them.
If I can keep the deer off them.
That's very true. And they are going to be a lot, you know. The females are, you know, going to be having babies really soon, and then they're going to be, you know, not necessarily with the babies, but there's going to be a lot more of the deer coming up close and personal with the plant material looking for food to keep themselves healthy.
Right.
Well, great. Well, thanks, Dorn. Or Doris.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bye.
My fault. And now let's go to Diane's. Hi, Diane.
Hi.
Hi.
We just finished having our suburban acreage, forestry mulched. And I, and a shout out to No Limits Land Management. Josh was great. But what do we do now? I mean, how do we manage it now?
As far as your mulch?
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, as far as the land that we gained back, I mean, the honeysuckle and the kudzu and the dead trees, they're all gone. And now I have open fields. Well, I don't want that stuff to grow back. What do I do now?
Well, probably what I would do is just be patient for one full season or one full year and see what, you know, what happens as a result of having all this stuff removed. So I'm assuming it was removed root system-wise, and, you know, the dead trees obviously wouldn't matter, but still the root systems are going to have an impact on anything that you would, you know, want to install. But I'd wait for a year and just see how everything looks. And just in general, the plant material that still remains, and kind of then make a decision after that. And then, you know, because as we head into this time of year, spring is not the most ideal time to plant if you want to do some installation of, let's say, more decorative type dogwoods or witch hazel or crab apples or whatever it happens to be, or some, you know, shade trees, be it maples or whatever. And, just kind of be patient, because you've spent a lot of time and energy to get it to this point. And then that way you can make a better decision on what you want to do with it.
Okay, good. Yeah, but just watch it and deal with.
Yeah,
if you, honeysuckle as it comes back.
Right, exactly. So hopefully they pulled the honeysuckle up and got, you know, got rid of the root system. If they didn't, you want to get it under control again. If you have to use an herbicide like a weed or a woody plant killer, that type thing, so to kind of get that back to ground zero.
Okay, great. Well, this was just, I think I gained an acre of ground.
Whoa.
After he cleared, it's called forestry mulching, and Josh Billings was great, and he just cleared so much of that unsightly stuff out of there.
Right. And then as you, during the course of this year, is, you know, there are certain things that you have interest in. It goes back to the, you know, me talking about making sure that when you do installation that you're not going to get an instant impact, and you understand that maybe as far as the size wise and the plant material you buy and everything else, just watch for, you know, how big these things are going to get from a mature standpoint. Now, obviously, with shade trees or something like that, it's going to be multiple years before it starts, you know, causing problems. But still, I mean, planning, you know, for the future as well as planning for today is kind of how you orchestrate a, you know, a really good landscape installation and slash design.
Great. All right. Well, thank you so much for your help.
Sure. My pleasure. Now let's head over to Jay's yard. Hi, Jay.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We have a long paver driveway with a persistent weed problem. We've had professionals come in and put barometric sand in, and that was pretty expensive. We've tried herbicides, and then finally we've resorted to torching it with a propane torch. Any advice on keeping the weeds out of the pavers?
There, I mean, there's, you've done everything that you probably can do. There's not too much else to do. Now, if you knew what type of weed it is, I mean, you might even try, you know, to put a pre-emergent down to see if that would help, as opposed to a, you know, a post-emergent. If these are annual weeds that are coming up, then that would certainly help. I mean, probably that would be the only thing that you haven't done that might help you a little bit.
Okay, and that pre-emergent is spring or winter? Or what time?
One is, you know, in the springtime when the forsythia is in bloom, and then there's another application for in August. So there's two different kinds of annual weeds that these kill. And also these will kill, pre-emergent kills not just the annual weed seeds, but it will kill perennial weed seeds. So if some of your troubles are perennials, that the seeds have, you know, blown in or come in on the bottom of your shoes or on the bottom of your car tires or whatever it happens to be, then you could, you know, that's what you could really do.
Okay, we'll check it out. Thanks a lot. Great show.
Sure. My pleasure. 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Zach just hung up. He was going to be next. So if you want to call us back, you can certainly do that. With a deer, you know, deer circumstance, if you live in a neighborhood where you know there's going to be deer problems, like the lady said when, you know, she kind of cringes a little bit when she starts to see her spring flowering bulbs foliage emerge because she knows the deer are going to be coming in real soon. And deer, they have a really pretty good memory. So if there's a place that they have historically gone and there's been stuff to eat, they will return. There's no getting around it. Some of the plant material that you know, the deer kind of stay away from, as far as this, there's not going to be too many bulbs, but there are some. Lycoris, allium, crocus, you know, glory of snow, snowdrops, hyacinths, grape hyacinths, the iris reticulata, and daffodils. You know, they really don't like those particular plants. But if it's a severe winter, guess what? They're going to eat anything they can find that's green. So that's what it's all about. Let's see. Why don't we head over to Ron's yard before we take a break? Hi, Ron.
Hi.
Hi.
I was wanting to take and transplant some maple trees. What is the best time of the year to do that?
With the maples, with really anything, it's always better to plant or transplant, you know, in the fall. So the reason for
when the leaves fall off or before they fall off?
Well, just as the weather starts changing, you know, if they start coloring up and things like that, then go ahead and do that. But when the temperatures head towards the fall type temperatures. And the reason for that is the air temperature is going to be cooler, but the ground temperature is still warm, so transplanting it in the fall is why it's to the advantage. You can certainly do it in the springtime. It's just moving, you know, digging up or installing new plant material in the spring. The ground is cold because we're coming out of winter, and then the root system to get established is going to have a little bit more difficult time. It's just a little bit more concerning, where in the wintertime, you know, or in the fall, the ground is warm. That triggers root growth, helps the plants get acclimated a little bit sooner. And there's, you know, potential for you to go, well, what about winter? But the plants are already asleep, and they've got the root systems at least, you know, started to be established. So you could do it really anytime. Fall is the best, but you can do it in the springtime. There's not a problem.
If you was going to do it in the spring, what month would you do it in?
I'd probably do it before the buds open up as far as showing the leaves.
So like late February, you think?
Yeah, right. February, you know, like Valentine's Day all the way up through mid-March, because usually by mid-March the buds start opening up.
Right, right. Okay, sir, thank you.
All right, great. Thank you.
All right.
314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We've got phone lines open. Back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, many of us have received or purchased ourselves poinsettias. And technically, it is only a Christmas? No. It's a regular houseplant. So basically, after the holiday season is over, you just treat it like a regular type houseplant. So until we, you know, get a little bit later into the year, like in September or so, you can just grow it like a houseplant, put it in front of a nice, bright, sunny window. Just watch the potting mix on the inside of the pot and see that once it starts shrinking away, and lift the pot at that same time when it starts shrinking away so you can see how much the pot weighs. That way, in the future, you don't have to necessarily watch for the inside of the potting mix, inside of the pot, the potting mix shrinking. You can just go by the lifting the pot and the weight, and then, you know, water it really well, and then just don't water it again until that starts shrinking away, or until you can tell by the weight of it. As the reason why I'm saying weights, because we, Tracy and I, both like the rosemary trees. So in other words, rosemary plant has been pruned into the shape of a tree. And that's the only, you know, one of the seasonal things that I have every year. And I grow them until summertime or until the weather starts warming up. And then I stick it out in the landscape someplace and just kind of leave it out there. And if they survive, that's fine. If they don't, that's fine as well. So let's head over to Lynette's yard. Hi, Lynette.
New Year.
Hello?
Mike?
Yes.
Hi. I have some English ivy that I really need to get it removed away. It's kind of by the foundation of the house. And I'm wondering if this is a good time to try to pull that up.
Yeah, I mean, as long as you don't, you know, you're not worried about killing it, because that's what you're going to be trying to do. Certainly, get out there. You know, you can, I mean, pulling it up is not going to be all that easy, but just be patient and you'll work through it that way.
Okay. All right. I was wondering also, would it help? As far as pulling it up, to spray it with something first and then, you know, try it a week later or so? Or do you think that would help at all?
This time of year, the herbicides are going to be translocated so slowly, I don't think I'd, you know, fool with it that all that much. I'd get out there and pull up as much as you possibly can, and then watch and see where you're going to start to see some more sprigs as the weather warms up, and then that you could certainly go after with an herbicide.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, just realize that it's, you know, I don't know how long, how well it's been established or anything else, but it's going to be a lot of work. And, I mean, this is a good time of year to do it.
Okay. Then I'll get on it.
All right.
You.
All right. Thank you, Lynette.
Have a good day.
Yep. You too. And going back to the poinsettias, again, they're just more or less a tropical house plant, so they need light. And what, you know, to get those leaves, the bracts are really not leaves, but to get the bracts to change colors back to red in the future, then we're going to talk about that a little bit later in the year. But not too much you can do right now. Just enjoy them for what they, you know, what they have. And let's go over to Kyle's yard. Hi, Kyle.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I have some crepe myrtles in my front, and they'll be 3 years old this June, or they would have been planted for 3 years this June. I have not ever pruned them, so kind of was wondering what I should do this, if I should prune them this spring. They're kind of tall and leggy. I'd rather that they fill out a little more, so. What do you think?
Basically, anything that, you know, is summer blooming, you're better off. You can go ahead and prune it before the new growth begins. But unfortunately, what you might do is might kind of disrupt the flowering. But you could encourage, you know, some new, twig growth and things like that. But just get the pruning done as soon as you possibly can, because the summer blooming ones like crepe myrtle, they don't set their flower buds until later on in the season. But so that's why you want to get them pruned before there's any kind of growth on them at all. And sometimes that's, you know, that kind of messes them up. But for the most part, with summer bloomers, prune in the springtime, late winter, before any kind of growth is showing at all.
Okay, so I could do it now?
Yes.
Okay. And how far back should I cut them? There's some that are like 6 feet tall, some of the branches.
Well, I would say just be cautious. Don't prune them back too heavy or too far. I would say 1/3 would be the maximum, 20%, or 1/3 would be the maximum I'd prune off.
Of each stalk or stem or whatever?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you.
Yep. And another thing you can do, too, is just, you know, if you still got the tags on them, it has the individual varieties. And check the variety type that you have, because some of them are going to be more bushy type, you know, hybrids than others. And maybe you've got the ones that are not so, let's say, bushy. So the pruning will help some, but it's not necessarily going to guarantee that they're going to be nice and full.
Gotcha.
All right.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
And now let's go over to Bill's yard. Hi, Bill.
Oh, hi, Mike.
Hi.
Hi. I wanted to know, how early can I start planting some grass seed?
You could do you have the grass seed right now?
No, I don't. I have to get it.
Okay, so if you do it too soon, what could happen is it could be warm and it could germinate, but then we could have a cold snap, and newly germinated seed can have a difficult time if it gets too cold. But I would say you'll wait for probably until mid-February. That's probably when I'd put the grass seed down. Now, you're talking about cool season like bluegrass or fescue or something along that line, correct?
Yes.
And what you can do now, though, is what you can do is you can have the area have it core aerated and put some compost down and then put the seed down, you know, at the sort of the time that I talked about.
Okay. I remember here somewhere where they said when you get that last light snow, put some grass seed on that and let it kind of melt in the ground with the snow. Is there anything to that?
Not really. I mean, what you're doing is you're just getting in the seed down in close contact with the ground, but you can wait for that if you want. There may not be enough snow to actually send it down off the, I'm assuming you have an existing lawn in this space, or
right.
You can just water, you know, water it after you put the seed down.
Okay, what was that, ladies, again, what was that last month you said? I'm sorry, I didn't write that down.
Yeah, it's probably, I would say, the last time you could do it. I don't like to do any kind of seeding in May. That's almost getting too late. And then when the seed germinates, it's going to be the heat of the summertime. So sometime between, let's say, mid-April would be, well, maybe even mid-March. It's going to be weather-dependent. So to put the seed down too soon is problematic from the standpoint that the ground is cold and it might not trigger the growth as, you know, as far as the germination and everything else. So that's why you want to wait till the ground warms up a little bit. If you want to head to your favorite garden center and spend about $10 and get a soil thermometer, then watch, you know, put the soil thermometer, follow the instructions on it. And when you start to see the ground temperature 55 degrees 3 or 4 days in a row, then that's the time to be putting the seed down.
Appreciate much.
Sure. My pleasure.
All right, thanks.
Yep. And now let's go over to Jim's yard. Hi, Jim.
Yes. I'm having a new yard put in the front and new grass put in the front. It's fescue. And someone told me the best thing to put on it is Milorganite. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, Milorganite is an organic fertilizer. There's nothing, you know, there's no problem with that. Personally, that's fine. You know, I like to, make sure that you get the area, whoever's doing the, you know, the work for you, core aerates the area first, too. And that way, that's going to break up the sort of the rough qualities of, you know, the normal type soils. And
I'm gonna have about 2 inches taken out and 2 inches of compost brought in until then okay. Laid aside.
Whoa! So you're doing sod, not seed.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, you're doing everything just right then.
Okay, then a Milorganite just fine.
Yeah, that's fine. It's a low analysis type fertilizer, basically what it is.
Oh, okay. All right. Thanks.
Sure. Mike Miller, KMWash Garden Hotline. We have phone lines open, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Just remember that if you've put any de-icers down, and this is any chemical, no matter how earth-friendly that chemical happens to be, it's recommended that you spread gypsum over the areas where this de-icer, when whatever it was melting, has run off into, because what the gypsum does, it neutralizes this sort of dehydration factor and potential plant damage. So whether it's to your lawn or to perennials or to ground covers or anything else, spreading gypsum, you know, as when we've kind of, you know, all the de-icers have been put down and you start to see some active growth, that was probably something I'd recommend. Let's head over to Donna's yard now. Hi, Donna.
I'm a novice with irises. We moved into a house, and there's along the east wall of the house. It gets all the morning sun. There's a whole row of irises. I've cleaned them out, you know, when the dead stalks come down and everything. But now my question is, I've noticed that in the neighborhood, some people cut them off. Are they supposed to be cut off? And then the next question I have, they seem to be kind of growing over each other somewhat. So can they be cleared out and can they be transplanted? And when would you do that? How do you care for them is what I need.
Well, basically, I would say just leave them alone as they are. And that way, for this first full season, you know, watch the foliage, watch, see what happens. See if they do flower, because some of the, let's say, clumps of the iris, the classic flags, as they age, they lose the ability to flower, and then you're only going to get the foliage. So find out which ones, see if they're all healthy flowering-wise and everything else, and then kind of go from that standpoint. As far as what you can do or what you need to do, you know, for, let's say, normal care, you can cut them down if you like, because the foliage is going to be damaged anyway by the wintertime, and then the new growths, you know, the new foliage growth should occur anyway. But the main thing to do, I would say, for the first year, watch out and see and make sure that the ones that the clumps or clusters that you want to save, that you mark or whatever, that these are ones that are still flowering, and maybe they're all still flowering. But as I said, sometimes when they age, they start losing the ability to do any kind of flowering.
Okay, so if they're old and they don't flower or there's very little of it, then pretty much you just have to dig that out and start over?
Pretty much, yes, because there's nothing you can do. You can't divide them. You can't fertilize them. You can do nothing that's going to encourage, you know, sort of, let's say, flowering ability if they've already kind of lost that quality.
Okay, and if they, when I discover how tall they get or anything, so cutting them back doesn't make, like, the stalks any shorter, that they, if the weight of them, they won't fall over, or it does, it's just what type they are about how tall they get.
Exactly.
Okay, that's what I need. You're great. Thank you.
I don't think I'm great, but anyway, let's head over to Donald's yard. Hi, Donald.
Yeah, I know, Mike. Question. I would like to plant about 3 or 4 Japanese maples out in front of the house. And I want to know, is there a difference? Are there different varieties of Japanese maple? Or are they about the same?
No, there's extreme different varieties of Japanese maple. So some of them can get up to 15 feet high. Some of the ones that have the more dissected leaves, they grow like an umbrella in whatever height you buy them at. They stay pretty much that height and never grow. They only grow wider. So there's definitely, you know, you can either check it out on the internet or wait or go to your favorite garden center and talk to them about the varieties. But some of them are ones that are going to come out in the springtime red, and they're going to stay red all growing season. Some will come out red and then, you know, or come out green and then not change to a red color until the fall. So, no, there's a great variety and difference in the Japanese maples.
Okay. But what is the average time of growth for those? But how long does it take for those to grow up?
It just depends upon, you know, if they're, you know, planted properly. Whatever size is bought, the hole should be dug 3 times the diameter of the root ball. Only about 80% is deep. The soil, don't add fertilizer to the soil, but just, you know, add some organic matter to the soil where they're being planted. And it's just going to take, you know, it depends upon the growing circumstance. If there's existing trees, make sure you don't put them too close to any kind of, you know, let's say concrete work, foundation, sidewalks, or things like that, because they're all going to overgrow those particular situations.
One last question. When I moved in the house 30 years ago, a guy was planting a tree, and he had tried so that he had to try against the light post. I don't know what that was for, like he's hold the tree up or something.
So, well, I don't quite understand your question there, but a 30-year-old tree, you're saying it's gotten too big?
No, I was just wondering why he had it tied against the light post. He had it planted, but it was going where he had it tied against the light post.
Oh, I have no idea. That's crazy. Planting anything next to a light post is not something you should be doing.
Okay. Thank you a lot.
Sure.
Thank you.
And Debbie, how are you today?
And thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is about a wisteria I have. I planted her from a 4-inch pot and about 6 years ago. She has been beautifully blooming for me since she was 3 years old, probably about 6-7 feet tall now, on a trellis and halfway on the trellis, growing wonderfully. I'm interested when I prune her back, because she does get pretty wild in her limbs, and so that I don't hurt the blooms for the next year.
With wisteria is, when is it going to bloom? Is it going to bloom in May? Is that when yours blooms?
Yes, it blooms in May.
Right. The best thing, because that would be considered a spring bloomer, is to wait until after it finishes flowering and then prune it at that time.
Oh, okay, I see. Any other info on wisterias you can give me?
Other than, you know, they're just wild and crazy, that's about it.
I mean, she's beautiful. She blooms well. Her flowering smell is wonderful. And I always wanted one, and I didn't think it would grow as well as it did, but it has. So I'm really pleased with her. So, okay, well, thank you for your info.
Sure, my pleasure. And,
okay,
Jim, can you do it kind of quick?
Yes, sir, I can. 2 months ago, I had 3 trees removed and had the stumps ground out and the roots. And I had the chips left, and I want to clean them out. I want to go to St. Louis Compost and see if they have a combination of compost and soil that I can put back down. Would you recommend seed or sod, and when to do it?
Basically, it's going to be a really rough spot, even if you do, you know, add the, you know, St. Louis composting materials and everything else, because of just, it's the roots of the trees are still going to be viable. They're still going to be aggressive, and they're still going to be problematic. You're not going to get all the chips out of there, and that's going to cause dehydration of seed or sod. So, you know, you could try either one, but success is going to be somewhat limited, to be honest.
Hey, thank you for your military service, and thank you for your service you provide every week.
Sure, my pleasure. Yeah,
thank you, sir.
Yep.
Bye.
4 years in the Air Force. Wow. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. See you next week.
I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall's back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.
A Japanese maple, or are they about the same?
Now, there's extreme different varieties of Japanese maple. So some of them can get up to 15 feet high. Some of the ones that have the more dissected leaves, they grow like an umbrella in whatever height you buy them at. They stay pretty much that height and never grow. They only grow wider. So there's definitely, you know, you can either check it out on the internet or wait or go to your favorite garden center and talk to them about the varieties. But some of them are ones that are going to come out in the springtime red, and they're going to stay red all growing season. Some will come out red and then, you know, or come out green and then not change to a red color until the fall. So, no, there's a great variety and difference in the Japanese maples.
Okay. But what is the average time of growth for those? But how long does it take for those to grow up?
As far, well, it just depends upon. you know, if they're, you know, planted properly, whenever whatever size is bought, the hole should be dug three times the diameter of the root ball. Only about 80% is deep. The soil, don't add fertilizer to the soil, but just, you know, add some organic matter to the soil where they're being planted. And that's it's just going to take, you know, it depends upon the growing circumstance. If there's existing trees, make sure you don't put them too close to any kind of, you know, let's say concrete work, foundation, sidewalks, or things like that, because they're all going to overgrow those particular situations.
One last question. When I moved in the house 30 years ago, a guy was planting a tree, and he had, tied so that he had to tie against the light pole. I don't know what that was for, like he's hold the tree up or something.
So, well, I don't quite understand your question there, but a 30-year-old tree, you're saying it's gotten too big?
No, I'm not saying it. I was just wondering why he had it tied against the light post. Oh. He had it planted, but it was going where he had it tied against the light post.
Oh, I have no idea. That's crazy. Planting anything next to a light post is not something you should be doing.
Okay. Okay. Thank you a lot.
Sure.
Thank you.
And Debbie, how are you today?
Brennan, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is about a wisteria I have. I planted her from a 4-inch pot and about 6 years ago. She has been beautifully blooming for me since she was 3 years old, probably about 6-7 feet tall now, on a trellis and halfway on the trellis, growing wonderfully. I'm interested when I prune her back, because she does get pretty wild in her limbs, and so that I don't hurt the blooms for the next year.
You know, basically, with, you know, with wisteria is, when is it going to bloom? Is it going to bloom in May? Is that when yours blooms?
Yes, it blooms in May.
Right. The best thing, because that would be considered a spring bloomer, is to wait until after it finishes flowering and then prune it at that time.
Oh, okay. I see. Any other info on wisterias you can give me?
Other than, you know, they're just wild and crazy, that's about it.
I mean, she's beautiful. She blooms well. Her flowering is smell is wonderful, and I always wanted one, and I didn't think it would grow as well as it did, but it has, so I'm really pleased with her. So, okay, well, thank you for your info.
Sure, my pleasure. And
okay,
Jim, can you do it kind of quick?
Yes, sir, I can. 2 months ago, I had three trees removed and had the grounds, stumps ground out and the roots. And I had the chips left, and I want to clean them out. I want to go to St. Louis Compost and see if they have a combination of compost and soil that I can put back down. Would you recommend seed or sod, and when to do it?
Basically, it's going to be a really rough spot, even if you do, you know, add the, you know, St. Louis composting materials and everything else, because of just it's the roots of the trees are still going to be viable. They're still going to be aggressive. And they're still going to be problematic. You're not going to get all the chips out of there, and that's going to cause dehydration of seed or sod. So, you know, you could try either one, but success is going to be somewhat limited, to be honest.
Hey, thank you for your military service, and thank you for your service you provide every week.
Sure, my pleasure. Yeah,
thank you, sir.
Yep.
Bye.
4 years in the Air Force. Wow. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. See you next week.
Hey, y'all. Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze. Grab your favorite thong, because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled-up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.